take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
CannabisRadio.com presents The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, this is great, man. Well, on the
earth. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, October 19th, 2016, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are so excited for the next few days. Today, of course, is the final presidential debate. The fireworks will be going off around, 6 o'clock tonight, Pacific time? Right after the show, I'll be taking a look at that. We're going to talk a little bit about that on the show today. In the Radical Rant, I'm going to cover some of the recent news about Hillary Clinton and the Podesta email leaks and the speeches at Xerox and all that. We'll talk about that at the end. But before we get to the rest of this stuff, I got to talk about football. That's right, football. The Packers and the Bears are playing tomorrow on Thursday Night Football. It's the oldest rivalry in the NFL. It's my favorite team, the Green Bay Packers, and I am so excited to announce that the campaign to regulate marijuana-like alcohol in Arizona has a new TV ad supporting Prop 205, the legalization initiative. It's going to air during Thursday Night Football between the Bears and the Packers, and it features Super Bowl champion quarterback Jim McMahon, a current Arizona resident who started his career with the Chicago Bears in 1982, ended his career with the Green Bay Packers in 1996, and even spent a year on the Arizona Cardinals. This is the ad.
I think it was my second year in the league when I had my first injury. That's when I started using painkillers, and I was using them daily, pretty much the rest of my career. It takes its toll. It's taken too many of those things. Once I retired, I got rid of those. I moved out here to Arizona, got my medical card, and been using marijuana ever since. Someone like me can afford to be a medical marijuana patient, but others aren't so lucky. Marijuana should be available to all adults who need it. I'm voting yes on Prop 205 and hope you will too.
I just love that he added, I can afford to be a medical marijuana patient, especially in Arizona. Their doctor fees are high. Their state registry fees are high. The costs of weed are high. It's just great that he made that point. So thank you so much, Jim McMahon, the Punky QB. We really appreciate that. And I need to hear from more football players, more athletes to get into these ads, to get behind supporting us. More celebrities, more actors, more comedians, more musicians. Come on, let's get your face on some of these commercials and get legalization passed in your state. All right, also coming up on the show, later on in hour two, we're going to go through some more of these anti-pot ads. There's a lot of money flowing in. We'll tell you a little bit about that in the Cannabis Radio News, but this money is starting to buy these anti-marijuana ads, and we're going to debunk them here coming up in hour two. But here in hour one, right after the news, we'll get into behind the headlines where Vice News, Keegan Hamilton, I've spoken with Keegan a couple of times, he's uncovered the FDA's reasons why weed had to stay in Schedule 1. Yes, he did a Freedom of Information Act request and finally got the information back. Five reasons they gave, at least in this story, why marijuana had to stay in Schedule 1. But also, surprisingly, five things the FDA says are bogus about marijuana. Some of the reefer madness that they debunked. So we'll talk about that behind the headlines. In drug war data mining, if you haven't seen the Twitter feeds, the Facebook feeds from the marijuana community, then you don't know the great news we got from Gallup today. New Gallup poll out on marijuana legalization nationwide. We'll tell you what the new support number is. In our Cannabis Business Chronicles, I've got an excerpt from Brendan Kennedy's keynote at the International Cannabis Business Conference in Vancouver. He's the CEO of Privateer Holdings. They've got Tilray up in Canada and the Marley Natural brand down here. And we'll talk again about Hillary Clinton, her stand on marijuana. Plus, an hour or two, we'll take your calls at 650-LEGAL-MJ. I'm Radical Russ, live from Portland. We're back right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Thank you. earn your PhD in THC monetization with CannabisRadio.com. Don't be late.
Dr. Gabber, hurry. Its temperature is shooting past 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It's burning up.
I'm afraid for this little guy, it's just too late.
What caused the problem?
Only Dr. Dabber can maintain the perfect temperature for a smooth-tasting, slower burn. This standard vaporizer lost all of its health benefits, sending it up in smoke.
So you're telling me that most vapor pens burn so hot they produce smoke, not vapor?
Correct. Keep away from those standard vaporizer pens and turn to Dr. Dabber. Doctor's orders.
Less heat, more flavor.
It's time to Hemp Presents.
I am going to titillate your audio orifices with weekly radio rendezvous with some of the premier movers, shakers, and history makers of the cannabis community.
Radio resident Hempo Sapien Vivian McPeak.
I will be putting out a call to action on the issues of the day and putting your interests under the big lights as I provide cannabis commentary and weekly interviews that go straight for the nugular.
Marijuana!
Hemp Presents, only on Cannabis Radio.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
She doesn't have the look. She doesn't have the stamina. To be president of this country, you need tremendous stamina.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Hey everybody, it's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for the Cannabis Radio News. Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Cannabis Radio News is now available exclusively at CannabisRadio.com. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis Radio News.
This is your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. A new Gallup poll released Wednesday shows 60% of American adults now say that marijuana should be legal, the highest level of support in nearly a half century of polling on the question. The Gallup poll tracks closely with the numbers from the Pew Research Center released last week showing 57% support for legalization. When Gallup first asked about legalization in 1969, only 12% of Americans supported the proposition. Support rose briefly to 28% in the late 1970s, but languished in the low to mid-20s throughout much of the 80s and 90s as the federal war on drugs hit a fever pitch. Utah's Democratic candidate for governor says he supports legalizing medical marijuana to bring relief to people like his wife, who pleaded guilty to charges of pot possession in connection to the drug she uses to treat chronic pain. Mike Weinholz said in an emotional news conference Tuesday that the current laws leave doctors with little choice but to prescribe powerful painkillers with a risk of addiction that has made opioids an epidemic in Utah and elsewhere. Donna Weinholz says she suffers from arthritis and degenerative spinal conditions that left her unable to leave her bed some days. She says that after she started using marijuana, she was able to plant tulip bulbs again. Conservative Utah has passed a very limited cannabidiol-only law, but a push to expand it died in the state legislature this year. All five states considering recreational marijuana legalization, Arizona, California, Maine, Massachusetts, and Nevada, have seen more money flowing to groups that favor legalization than to those fighting it. But deep pocket donors who drove opposition campaigns in years past are opening their pocketbooks again. Casino owner Sheldon Adelson of Nevada has spent $2 million on opposition in Nevada and $1 million to oppose legalization in Massachusetts. Insys Therapeutics, an opiate manufacturer that's working on a synthetic cannabis drug, has given at least $500,000 in its home state of Arizona. Discount Tire has given another $1 million to the Arizona opposition. Carol Barnett Jenkins, a Publix grocery chain owner, donated $800,000 to fight medical marijuana in Florida. Julie Schauer, a Pennsylvania retiree, gave more than $1 million to a group opposing legalization nationwide. Other large donations to fight legalization come from U-Haul and the Wine and Spirits Wholesalers in Arizona, the Beer Distributors Pack in Massachusetts, MGM Resorts International and Atlantis Casino and Resort in Nevada, and Howard Samuels, a drug treatment therapist in Los Angeles, and the Beer and Beverage Distributors in California. The Denver Post editorial board has endorsed Denver Initiative 300, a four-year pilot licensing program that would allow for adult use of marijuana at certain venues and special events. The Post acknowledged the city's problems with, quote, illegal toking and vaping in the streets and alleys and parks, end quote, since legalization was passed in 2012. The Post also criticized the lack of appropriate venues for adult consumption, including, quote, gripes from tourists who wish to try some legal Colorado weed, end quote, as well as renters and homeowners whose marijuana use is frowned upon by, quote, family, condo associations, housing authorities, and apartment rules, end quote. Initiative 300, quote, might yield some relief for the problem of public use, end quote, according to the editorial board, which urges its readers to vote yes on the measure. Legalizing medical marijuana doesn't turn more teens into stoners, researchers say. Though more people over 25 were likely to ingest marijuana if their home states approved it for medical purposes, there was no effect on anyone younger. The study, which was published online in the journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence, found that people over 25 were slightly more likely to have used marijuana in the past month after their state legalized it for medical purposes. That number grew to 7.15% from 5.87% for that group. This is the first study that looks at how medical marijuana laws have affected actual use. Columbia University researchers used annual survey data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health between 2004 and 2013. This has been your Cannabis Radio News for Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. I'm Russ Belville.
Forwarding the cause of legalization and research of the growing cannabis industry, one podcast at a time. The Cannabis Radio Network.
Mindful of sustainable practices and limiting their environmental footprint, Sansal Hemp is always grown outdoors, as nature intended. By starting with uniform genetic profiles, Sansal ensures the plant will maintain its optimal performance and yield consistently throughout its life cycle. It is through innovative processes that Sansal is able to achieve pure whole hemp extracts and meet industry requirements and the level of quality desired by many of their customers. Healthy plants, healthy people. SansalCBD.com. Improve your lifestyle naturally.
The regulation of marijuana means more money for schools.
Because our schools here in Nevada are so underfunded, this would be a great revenue source. Provide about $20 million a year extra for our school systems.
This tax revenue, it will be so helpful to all the education system throughout the state.
The measure specifically calls for all tax revenue to go into our education fund.
Vote yes on question two.
Vote yes on two.
Please, vote yes on two.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we take a look at some great work done by Keegan Hamilton. He writes for Vice News, and the story that he brought forth has to do with the FDA and why they decided to keep marijuana in Schedule 1. You recall that this was a petition that the DEA had forwarded to FDA, and they dragged their feet on it for 6 or 7 years. And just this year, we finally got the notice that, yeah, it's going to stay in Schedule 1. So Keegan did a Freedom of Information Act request on the FDA wanting to get their documents, about 121 pages of documents that they used to support their case. And we now know, we now have these documents. They refused at first. He had to do an appeal before they finally gave in. And that's pretty typical, right? When the government doesn't want to give you these documents, they'll just refuse it, figuring, eh, you're not going to follow up. And when you do, you usually win. So here are some of the findings from the FDA as to why cannabis needed to stay in Schedule 1, more restrictive than cocaine, OxyContin, and fentanyl. This is why. Number one, marijuana is addictive to monkeys. Yeah, they cite this study in 2000 where they took squirrel monkeys and they taught them how to self-administer THC, and they found out that the monkeys liked it, and so that's shows why it's a drug of abuse. Monkeys like to get high. That's why we need to put humans in cages. Number two, people prefer to smoke marijuana. According to the FDA's research, the people liked smoking marijuana better than taking Marinol pills, better than taking the pill form. And so they compared that to cocaine, opium, heroin, and meth, saying, quote, "The intense psychoactive drug effect achieved rapidly by smoking is generally considered to produce the effect desired by the abuser. This effect explains why abusers often prefer to administer certain drugs by inhalation rather than orally." End quote. Yeah, would have nothing to do with the fact that when you're smoking it, you're self-titrating. You can feel the effects immediately, and you can use more or stop when you get to where you need to be, as opposed to eating that Marinol pill and then waiting 45 minutes to see if 5 milligrams was enough for you. And if it wasn't, well, swallow another pill in an hour and maybe another 5 milligrams will do it for you. Well, that wasn't good. Okay, we'll swallow another one another hour later. Of course, the first pill from an hour ago might be wearing off by now. So maybe next time you'll take 10 milligrams or maybe 20, right? You're telling this to someone who's under chemotherapy puking, and you want them to try to hold pills down for an hour. All right, that's why we're smoking it, not because we want to get some sort of meth high or opium rush or something like that. Anyway, here's reason number three. Getting high makes users feel funny. Yeah, they said common effects of marijuana are increased merriment and appetite, heightened imagination, disorganized thinking, illusions, delusions, and hallucinations, and agitation, paranoia, confusion, drowsiness, and panic attacks. Okay, in the worst case scenarios, some of those things might happen for a very small minority of the cannabis users out there. Getting high makes you fun. Here's another reason why it had to stay in Schedule 1. Because it's easy to buy weed. They noted that, quote, "marijuana is more widely available from illicit sources than through legitimate channels," end quote. This is a reason why it has to stay illegal, because it's hard to get when it's illegal. Jeez, okay. And number five, the biggest reason, I would say, why marijuana has to be illegal, at least according to the FDA here, why it needs to stay in Schedule 1, why it needs to be treated like heroin and LSD, is marijuana is popular. They say, quote, "history and current patterns of abuse show that more than 42% of the U.S. population used marijuana at least once, and 7.6 million people use it on a daily or almost daily basis. It's just too popular. People like to do it." That's obviously why it's a drug of abuse. Not coffee or, you know, anything like beer or tobacco. Those can stay unscheduled because they're not popular. This is the madness, the pretzel logic that we get from our federal government whenever they have to talk about weed. Now, there was some good news in this. They did note that marijuana is not a gateway drug. They noted that marijuana doesn't seem to cause cancer. They noted that there is no link to mental illness. They noted that it's no more addictive than tobacco. And they noted that marijuana doesn't make you dumber. that those IQ studies were bunk. This is the FDA, by the way. So Kevin Sabet and all you prohibitionists who keep saying all that Madeline Meyer study and the 8-point IQ loss and the gateway drug stuff, you're the ones that keep telling us to go through the FDA to get marijuana legalized, to get it medicalized. The FDA itself is saying you're full of shit.
Hey, this is great, man.
I agree, Tommy. And speaking of Tommy Chong, we'll have an exclusive interview with Tommy coming up on Friday's show. I'm going to put it on Friday's show. I'm pre-recording an interview with Tommy tomorrow morning, and we'll have it on Friday's show. How's that? If you got any questions you'd like me to ask Tommy Chong, send them to me. Email at Radical Russ. Tweet me at Radical Russ. Radical Russ at Gmail for the email. Or Facebook Radical Russ.
Next to THC and CBD, you can now add CBR to your cannabis vernacular. CBR as in CannabisRadio.com.
The cannabis business industry is growing. Business is booming. And as new opportunities arise in newly legalized states, each market is getting more competitive. Today, it takes more than just being a good grower. Do you have the resources to market and handle this ever-changing business landscape? Let Canna Management Corporation help you grow your canna business with our vast resources and experience to make your business a fully functional service company. Financial management, HR, sales, marketing, efficiency, and more. CMC has the experience and the expertise to improve your business and help you better meet the demands of your clients and customers. Call Canna Management Corporation and let our team get you ready to grow. 415-269-8015. That's 415-269-8015. Or visit canna-management.com.
Tommy Chong is ready to cut through the smoke and change the tone of Tilk Radio.
Obama, for instance, no matter what he said, there's a whole bunch of people that are going to be against him for saying whatever it is. Santa Claus is a nice guy. Someone says, Santa Claus must be a thief if Obama likes him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a racist attitude.
The Tommy Chong Podcast, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome to my world.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
I am a round peg in a square hole.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Today in the Data Mines, we get a gift, an early Christmas gift from the Gallup Polling Organization, which notes today that support for legal marijuana use is up to 60% in the United States of America. This is the highest polling number we've ever gotten out of Gallup. There's been one previous poll that I've looked at that got a 61%. This was the Benenson poll, Associated Press, excuse me. AP back in March had a 61%, and Benenson Strategy Group back in March of 2015 had a 61% poll. But these numbers just continue trending up and up and up. And let me get some of the details here for you. 47 years Gallup's been asking about this. It's gone from 12% back in 1969 up to 60% now. And we've got a situation where this means we could have, after this election, you know, we've got five states voting on legalization. We could go from 5% of the United States population living somewhere where marijuana is legal to almost 25%. California brings another 36, 39 million, something like that, into the fold. So we could have a situation where one out of four Americans almost live somewhere where weed is legal. Now, we look through the polling trends, and of course, Gallup's previous poll was 58%, which they got twice. They got it in 2013 and 2015. And there, does that mean that we're reaching kind of a ceiling? Are we getting to a point where it's going to peak, where we're going to hit 58, 60, 62%, somewhere in there, and it'll stay there? Or will that number continue to trend upwards? One way we might get a look at that is to check out the demographics on the poll. What we find is that it's 60% nationwide, you know, if you count everybody. But if you just count the millennials, and in this case, we're going to define millennials as 18 to 34 years old, their support is at 77%. 77%. Middle-aged folks, 35 to 54, 61%. So this is really being, this number is being held down to 60 by the people 55 and older, your AARP set, your seniors, which only support legalization at 45%. But even within that number, there's some good news. That 45% among the seniors is up from 29% a decade ago. In 2003 and 2005, the support among seniors was 29%. Among the middle-aged people, it was at 35%. They got from 35 to 61. And from the millennial set, 18 to 34, up from 44 to 77. And that's just in a decade, folks, just one decade. And what has happened? What's been the significant advance from 2006 to 2016 has been not necessarily legalization. That's part of it. I mean, you're all saying legalization was 2012, but it's been creeping up since then, I believe, is the advent of retail marijuana. Kevin Sabet and Project Sam, all these guys like to point to 2009 as a date when, aha, this is when things changed. This is when we started to see dispensaries in these medical marijuana states, these storefront co-op kind of things. Whatever they're legal or not, but that's when it started to happen, about 2009. And Kevin Sabet's thing has always been that when legalization continues, it's going to be its own worst enemy. Because as it continues, the worst aspects of it will become more obvious. There'll be, you know, stone mayhem on the freeways. There'll be pot shops on every corner. People smoking in the parks. Mayhem, right? So these numbers since 2009 that continued to go up in support of legalization tell me that he's completely off base on this one. That the more legalization unfolds throughout this country, the more reports people get back about, hey, we made tax money. Hey, look, we're not seeing kids dropping out like crazy. The teen use isn't going up like crazy. The roads aren't littered with bodies. The more that keeps happening, the harder and harder it gets for these boys to keep crying wolf about what's going on with legalization. I sent a meme out earlier today. If you check out my Twitter account, a new meme for Kevin Sabet on this one. I took one of his quotes about how big tobacco, it's going to turn into big marijuana and it's going to freak everyone out. Well, big marijuana's here, and it seems to be that the people like it. If I check out all of the polls, and I've got a database of 110 polls that I've collected from various sources, mostly Gallup, mostly Pew Research, but a lot of the news stations too, CBS, NBC, Fox, ABC, CNN, that kind of stuff. And as I look at those polls, the last 2 years worth of polls, from October 15th of 2014 to today, and that counts 12 polls, the last dozen polls in a row, have been majority support for legalization, over 50%, with an average of 55%. And that's just the last 2 years of the polls. I can go all the way back. I have to go back all the way to February of 2013 to find a poll that had more opposition to legalization than support. That was a Fox News poll, by the way. Of course, Gallup had one in 2012 that was a 50 to 48. Since then, since March of 2013, There have been 24 polls taken nationwide. 24 polls taken nationwide. 20 of them have been above 50%. And the other four are plurality support, like a 48-47 or a 49-48 or a 45-45, a tie. We are winning. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to be a part of. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we've got an episode of the Cannabusiness Chronicles. I was up in Vancouver, British Columbia last Thursday and Friday at the International Cannabis Business Conference. And on Friday, it was Brendan Kennedy's turn to deliver his keynote speech. He's the CEO of Privateer Holdings. They're the company behind Tilray, the medical marijuana company in Canada, and the Marley Natural marijuana brand.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Keep your cannabis cravings under control. Feed your mind with CannabisRadio.com.
The next generation of vaporizers has arrived. Vuber vaporizers are blazing the way with unparalleled technology for oil, concentrate, or dry flower pens. Providing unsurpassed customer service and expert craftsmanship, Vuber vaporizers use cutting-edge technology, providing a power-packed, smoother vapor with a lifetime guarantee. Experience vaporizing the way it was meant to be, the Vuber way.
When legalizing safe, responsible adult use of marijuana, the most important question is how. By voting yes on Prop 64, adults 21 and over could only purchase marijuana at licensed marijuana businesses. And Prop 64 bans advertising directed at kids, requires strict product labeling, childproof packaging, and bans edibles that appeal to children. Smart provisions to safeguard our families. Learn more about the safeguards at yeson64.org.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Who's your favorite foreign leader?
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment. I'm having a brain.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too.
Hey, everybody. It's Radical Russ here from 420 Radio, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Cannabusiness Chronicles. This is an excerpt of Brendan Kennedy's keynote at ICBC.
Sometimes I think about prohibition as a triangle, where activists are attacking the triangle from one angle. And political campaigners are attacking prohibition from another angle. And as legalization takes place, whether medical or recreational, there's another angle that business can attack from. You know, business is just another form of activism if it's done right. Brands can fuel change. And I think that. That's one of the things that we're really excited about in countries and in states in the U.S. is that finally we're starting to see businesses fund some of these campaigns in other states and provide resources to campaigners outside of their state or outside of their country, and that's a huge change. That's a huge change from what we've seen, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, where it was much more difficult for political campaigners to raise funding from within within the industry. We talk about We talk about five ways that brands fuel change. And so our objective is to build bright, shiny brands that people can point to and say, that's what the end of Prohibition looks like, and we feel comfortable with that, whether it's medical or recreational. And that's our objective. And so the five I'll walk through are change perceptions of the product and user, inspire confidence and trust, reduce barriers to change, create and imply legitimacy, and then directly create change. In the 50s and 60s, Honda decided they were going to introduce motorcycles to the U.S. And there was this perception on the left of motorcycles and people who rode motorcycles. And that was what Honda was trying to deal with. And so their objective was to put a mainstream face on motorcycles. And within 4 years, they were selling four times more motorcycles than Harley-Davidson. And the way they did it was through ads like this. You know, you meet the nicest people on a Honda, right? It's really simple, but it changes perceptions of the product and user. Inspire confidence and trust. And so when Starbucks was initially ramping up, they had to educate people about coffee production around the world to raise the bar on coffee quality and people's consumers' perceptions of coffee quality. Reduce barriers to change. So Michelin was a tire company, right? And people didn't drive their cars a whole lot, and Michelin wanted to figure out a way to get people to drive their cars more. And so what they started doing was creating guidebooks. So you know, you could drive from Paris into the countryside and tour some spot or go to some restaurant. And that's how Michelin guidebooks started. That's how, you know, Michelin star restaurants started. They were trying to get people to drive more, so they would use more tires so that Michelin could sell more tires. And so they're trying to change perceptions of what you should use a car for, and change the barriers, reduce barriers to change mentally. You know, create and imply legitimacy. So this one's a little strange, but condoms used to be sold in brown packages, like simple brown packages, unbranded. And so Trojan came along and started branding condoms and tried to create and imply legitimacy by normalizing packaging, normalizing branding. You know, this has a really small quote, but the quote here is from the Surgeon General of the United States, and so they're trying to create and apply legitimacy around their brand and their packaging. And then the fifth point is directly create change. We're all, you know, everyone's familiar with Tom's, but there's a brand that is directly creating change. It's the social conscience is woven into the core of that brand. It's how we think about Rise Up, which is the charitable group part of Marley Natural that funded the expungement of the criminal records in Oregon. It's about directly creating change and tying that very closely into the core of the brand. One of the issues that a lot of people face in the industry is a lack of access to capital. And it's something that we faced 6 years ago. It's something that lots of people face. And Alex asked me to speak about this, about what sort of advice I would give to people who are looking to raise capital. And so, you know, my first point is tell a story. You know, I've heard thousands of pitches in my career, and the best pitches are always stories. You know, it's not a problem solution pitch. It's not a opportunity pitch. It's not a management team pitch. The best pitches are always stories. genuine, true stories that people are telling about themselves and their team and their company. It's a pretty simple point, but it's my first one. The second one is show a vision. Don't just pitch a product, but pitch, and the product can be anything. It can be a company, it can be a brand, it can be a service. Don't just pitch the product, pitch a vision. Tell people what you're going to do, what you see your company or your brand or your industry looking like 1, 2, 3, 5 years down the road. And that vision is what hooks people. Hooks people into interest in you and your company. The third one's pitch, which is a little strange because, I've never shown this deck before, right? So you all had to suffer through the first time I've walked through it. But I guarantee you that if I did it 10 more times, it would get better. And that's my point here, is that when I pitch investors, there's 150 slides in that deck. I walk through 42 of them. It takes 32 minutes. I could do it in my sleep because I've done it 1,000 times. The first 50 times were just practice with people who I know would never invest. But I can tell that story, and I've refined that story over the last 6 years. So that I know that it works, and so practice makes perfect, which might have been a better way of saying that. Learn from no, it can become yes, and there's 2 points. This one, be nice. Proudest is the wrong word. The most satisfying investors for me to close are the ones who said no 4 years ago. So the first part is learn from no. Ask people why they said no. Gather their feedback in a nice, polite way, and try to improve using that feedback. And then continue to be nice to them. Continue to send them information, even if they said no, even if it was a harsh no. Continue to send them information. Continue to talk to them, because the most satisfying yeses, the most satisfying investors for me to receive are the ones, investments to receive, are the ones that where people said no 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. And so that's important. Sometimes we tell people no, and I get lots of anger back, and that just closes the door. Show milestones. So every time I talk to someone, I say, the first time I talk to them, I'll tell them, we're working on A, B, and C, and it's a process, right? And so I may see them 3 months later, 6 months later, and I'm able to say, last time I told you we were doing A, B, and C, those are done. Now we're working on D, E, and F. And we hit those milestones, and the next time I talk to them, I'll tell them that we're working on G, H, and I. And that hitting those milestones and doing what you said you were going to do makes it easier to close those investors. Investors, next point is six. The investors don't fear making a bad investment. If people make bad investments all the time, I'm going to make bad investments for the rest of my life. That's just part of being an investor. The key, what bothers me, what keeps me awake at night, is missing the good ones. People who had a chance to invest in, pick Apple, Google, any successful company, and didn't. That's what keeps them awake at night. The next one is do it and keep doing it. The worst pitch is someone who says, I'm looking for funding so I can go do X. And that's really difficult to work. It's really difficult for that pitch to work. It's always better to say, this is what I'm doing. I need capital to do these next things, but I'm doing it. I'm going to do it with or without you. I'm going to do it with or without your capital. Feelings. This one could be simplified probably to just be fear of missing out. There's a huge fear in investors right now, fear of missing out on this industry. It doesn't matter if we're talking about, doesn't matter what country we're talking about. And that fear is just going to accelerate. It will accelerate through, sort of the next big milestones. It'll accelerate through the election. A lot of people are going to wake up on November 9th in the United States and be panicked that they don't have some investment in this particular industry. I really believe that mentally, from an investor perspective, it'll be the beginning of the end. And so they'll want some exposure. When Canada legalizes recreational cannabis, investors will want exposure. When Germany legalizes medical cannabis in the next 3 months, investors will want to invest in this industry. And so benefit from that fear of missing out and throw a little fuel on that fire and make people feel that fear. The next one's really simple. Don't lose fast, meaning we do a lot of research on people before they come and talk to us, and a lot of people do research on us before we go and talk to them. You know, if I'm talking to an investor, they've read the top 10 articles about us, and so make sure whatever people pull up is going to be good. Whether it's an article about you or a Facebook post or Instagram, we look at all that stuff, and everyone looks at all of that stuff around us and our companies. And so, don't have something on social media that you wouldn't want an investor to see, because they're going to find it. And then the last one's really simple: brand cliches. Not every brand in this industry has to embrace the cliches. Our thesis is that this is a mainstream product, and there will be more and more mainstream brands in this industry, and there'll be brands that segment all different kinds of consumers, from hipsters to baby boomers to women. There'll be premium brands, there'll be value brands, but they don't all have to embrace the cliches.
That's Brendan Kennedy, the CEO of Privateer Holdings. They are got many companies. Tilray is one of them, the medical marijuana company in Canada, as well as the Marley Natural brand. And I've had my eye on Privateer for a while. And, when they started this Marley Natural thing, it's like, yeah, but how does that help the ganja farmers in Jamaica? Well, looks like they're trying to do that. They're trying to do some good works, trying to put some money back into the community that made this possible. I'll talk a little bit more about that coming up in hour two. You'll have my response. But up next, my radical rant. Don't worry, President Clinton's not going to stop marijuana legalization now. Happy debate night.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
From dabs to chivas, sativas to indicas, we roll out a whole concentrate of fresh new content every week. It's like going from the greenhouse to the dispensary. CannabisRadio.com.
Play is Ted Growing, expelled botany sophomore and the biggest grower in town, only on Weed Firm Replanted. Available on the App Store and Google Play.
It's a lot of work being the biggest grower in town. Maintaining a room full of plants while dealing with a slew of eccentric customers, from a hardcore partier to the curious neighbor next door.
Is anybody home?
Help me expand my bud business by unlocking new strains, customizing my grow room, and completing challenges that you can't get enough of. Grow your empire so big you can see it from space. Low on funds? Don't worry. Weed Firm Replanted is free to download.
Download Weed Firm Replanted for free on the App Store and Google Play today. Get growing, Mr. Growing.
I'm Radical Russ from the Russ Belville Show.
Tennessee's Congressman Steve Cohen.
Well, if marijuana is a gateway drug, then kissing is a gateway activity to sexual addiction.
U.S. Representative Jared Polis.
Yes, we really have a growing group of representatives that support decriminalization.
It's the Russ Belville Show, the NPR of POT, weekdays live at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, exclusively on CannabisRadio.com.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers.
The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired up lawyer, or email fireduplawyer@gmail.com.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton in the rant today, because it is debate night. It's our final debate between Hillary Clinton and the orange-skinned goblin, whatever the hell that is, that puked out of the Republican Party this year. And folks, before I go too far, you know, people know me. It's funny. It's I get people online that rag on me for being such a libertarian. I'm like, really? Me? And then I get others that are like, rag on me because I'm such a liberal. You're such a bleeding heart progressive. Okay. And then I get others that are like, God, you're so conservative. So label me what you will, right? In a normal year, fine. But this year, it's just a question of sanity versus insanity. So anyway, there's been a lot of talk in the marijuana community about these recent revelations from the WikiLeaks hack, the theft of personal emails, that goes to the question of what would Hillary Clinton do as a president if, I should say when at this point, it's looking pretty bad for Donald, but when, if she's elected, is that going to be bad for marijuana legalization? And one little nugget came out that a lot of people are seizing on, because a lot of people in the marijuana community hate Hillary Clinton. They're for Gary Johnson, or they're just don't like anything, or they're whatever. But anyway, they're seizing on this little nugget of info from one of her Wall Street speeches, where she's speaking with the CEO of Xerox, and she asks, on the legalization of marijuana, where do you stand? And Hillary Clinton says, short in all sentences of the word. And the context was that, you know, short meaning you sell a stock short, which means you're betting against it. And in all sense of the word, meaning she supports nothing about marijuana, legalization of marijuana, right? That means she's absolutely against it federally and at the state level, right? Now, this would counteract a lot of other statements she's made, where she's been for, you know, rescheduling and pretty solid on medical and kind of a wait and see states' rights thing on legalization, right? Very timid, which is in her character, being the, you know, spineless kind of Democratic politician she is. She's going to watch polls. She's going to see what's safe, what's politically expedient, what's popular. I mean, we've seen her flip-flop on gay marriage when it became popular to do so. We saw her flip-flop on TPP when it became popular to do so, right? So I'll make these points, and also make the point that the speech thing was 2 months after Colorado started its first sales. And in the interim, we've had, what now, 10 national polls with greater than 50% legalization support. We've had another two states legalize, and one of them start their sales programs. So we got three states that have sales programs, and the sky is not falling, and tons of documentaries, and it's more in the national consciousness. All this evidence I can mount to say, look, This is not going to be high on her list in the first place, right? Not her issue to deal with in the first place. And second of all, if anything, she's going to look to do what's going to cause me the least political headache. What's going to be the least hassle I have to deal with? It's going to be very much like Obama, right? People kind of some people on our side kind of don't like Obama, that he didn't help it legalize. Well, he did. He did by not doing anything. You know, he could have had the attorney general, you know, write up some injunctions against Colorado and Washington moving forward on their recreational sales systems. That's under the Commerce Clause. They could have done it. They could have not issued the Cole memos or the Wilkinson memos or any of that kind of stuff. He could have not commuted more drug prisoners than any president, like the last six or seven combined. So he's done a decent job in just staying out of the way, right? This is something that's going to happen from the state level anyway. We've all known this for a long time, that it's going to go state by state by state, just like alcohol prohibition. The states decided not to enforce it, and finally the feds had, all right, fine, we won't do it. Okay? So given that, given all this evidence that it's going to be so popular, and it's become increasingly popular, and she's not going to want to deal with it, and it's a political headache, and she's going to stay off to the side and not cope, deal with that, right? The response I get back has got two little nuggets that come with it, which is, number one, the part of the Podesta leak that says, oh, she has a public position and a private position, right? Which I'm stunned that this shocks anybody, right? That there's public and private positions by politicians, that they'll say one thing and then behind closed doors they have to come up with compromises and exchanges and differences, that this is what politics is, people. But there's that point. And then the other point that comes back with it is the, you know, she's got the public-private position and that she's in the pockets of the pharmaceutical companies. The big health industry wants to make sure that there's no medical marijuana and there's no legalization. And they've got her in her, in, she's a puppet. She's controlled by these big donors and they're going to make her tear down the state legalization programs and reschedule marijuana to Schedule 2 and then run the DEA in and shut down all the medical programs and the sky will fall, right? All these terrible predictions. So here's, I've been doing some thinking on this, and here's my thinking on that point. The pharmaceutical thing, this idea that, you know, first of all, that presidents are unilaterally controlled by one particular big donor. Now, I'm not discounting the level of legalized corruption we have in our system, no doubt about that. But if it is, if you're granting this idea that the amount of money given to the candidate is the purse strings, the puppet strings that control them, then let's take a look at the money. OpenSecrets.org has this online. You know, where are they getting their money from? So this is Hillary Clinton's donations, right? What she's made, $529 million raised, 73% from campaign donations, 27% from super PACs. And of that, top donations by industry, we've got eighth on the list is health professionals. Eighth. $6 million, $6.8 million. This includes physicians, dentists, chiropractors, pharmacists, nurses, nutritionists, and other healthcare service providers, as well as their professional associations. $6.8 million. Other than that, the top 10 in here, $44 million from retired individuals, lawyers and law firms, $26 million. Now, those are trade organizations that promote legislation and members of firms who are involved in the political processes. Could be some lobbyists in there for pharmaceutical. Could be in that, within that $26 million. Education's $13 million. Women's issues $9 million. Real estate $8 million. Business services $7.9 million. Securities and investments $7.5 million. Health professionals again coming in at eighth, $6.8 million. Democratic and liberal organizations $6.4 million. Civil servants and public officials $5.9 million. So then, if it's the puppet theory, right? Wouldn't the retired people have the most power? The retirees at $44 million? Lawyers and law firms? I know a lot of lawyers are making money now, switching over to business law thanks to legalization, setting them up to be consultants and stuff. Maybe they'd be for creating more business for themselves. Plus, within these WikiLeaks things, there's some other things that are very promising about this. For one, she's been in correspondence with my congressman, Earl Blumenauer of Oregon. In one email, she writes, quote, "He wants to support me on policy and fundraising, specifically by helping on how to talk about marijuana and the need for fair taxes and banking on animal welfare concerns, which he say are sleeper issues that will turn out young people and motivate voters. He has a lot of ideas about what I could do, which would be the first time these interests are organized for a presidential campaign, and several states, Nevada, Ohio, and Florida, will have marijuana initiatives in 2016, end quote. In another one, she's looking about how the banking for marijuana business. I do think these businesses, if they're operating in according to state law and with federal guidelines, should be able to access banking services. Not having banking services can force legal and licensed businesses to deal in cash, making their stores a target for theft. So she's curious about the issue. She's a policy wonk. She's a total nerd. From a Black Lives Matter report, from my perspective, we need to look hard at decriminalizing behavior that is not harmful, that is not leading to violence, and try to figure out how to best do that. Oh, I hate when the websites do that. What else we got here? I support the idea of marijuana decriminalization. Hey, we'll continue this in hour two. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.